And I'd like now to welcome David Olson. He is the artistic director of Theater Work, which is performing a play called Beauty of the Father by Nilo Cruz, which opens this Friday at the James A. Little Theater and runs for 2 weekends. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Glad to be here.
Always good to have you back. And one of the institutions in Santa Fe, institution by now, you've been here, Theater Work, for what, 17
seasons? We're in our 17th season.
Yeah, amazing.
Working on production 113 in that time. That production, not talking about poetry readings and
right.
musical evenings and all of that.
Well, one of the groups that really does very high-quality theater here in Santa Fe. Now, tell us, without totally giving the play away,
sure.
but tell us a little bit about this play, Beauty of the Father.
Well, Beauty of the Father is Nilo Cruz's second play with Federico García Lorca, the Spanish poet, sort of at the center of it. We did the other one as well, Lorca in a Green Dress.
Right.
We did that in 2004, I think. And ever since then, Nilo and I have been in touch, have been communicating. He loved our he came out to see Lorca in a Green Dress, and he loved it and was very moved by the production and so on. So that made us solid colleagues
yeah.
and friends. So when this play came across my desk, literally, my wife Paula, who's been the managing director of Theater Work since it was founded in Minnesota 46 years ago, does these pre-selections of plays. She sort of knows what I might be pulled towards or what we're capable of as a company. And often I'm so overstimulated by plays that I can't get down to a little stack. And she does.
Yeah.
So often when it comes time to choose the season, there's this stack of 15 plays or so on my desk, and this was right on the top. I always know what that means. let's do it.
Let's look at this one right now.
So it suits us, as we can talk about why.
Yeah.
Well, it suits us because it breaks through, you know, theatrical conventions and challenges all of us, challenges the design team and me, to find solutions for stories that are being told that are sort of outside the beginning, middle, and end in a certain place kind of a story, which I also am drawn to at times. But this type of story that is very sort of poetic, I was thinking on the way over here, it's sort of like, you know, García Márquez meets Chekhov, meets a telenovela, all stimulated and inspired by the vision of Lorca and then by Nilo Cruz.
Right.
Who is very determined to create plays that speak to experiences in the world of people who are outside of the mainstream or who are in some way marginalized. So he often goes for those ideas. So it hit me very strongly when I first read it. I could see how difficult it might be to do.
I mean, it's a one of the things that's so interesting about it is, and I mean, we have love triangles are a staple of literature, but this is really a love rectangle.
Yes.
In which every point of the rectangle hits every other point going across and on the sides and
Absolutely.
Kind of Lorca in the middle.
Far too much love. And
yeah.
Far too much and an equal degree of alienation and loss in that rectangle as well. They aren't particularly good lovers, let's say.
Right. Really,
they come
nobody
to the,
is.
They come to it with desire that maybe can't be requited and with hurt that can't be solved by loving these people. You see what I mean, of course? As is true of many, many people. So love in the play, yes, it has the complexity that love in the world has. It doesn't simply solve things. If anything, it perhaps makes things, though, sometimes come into sharper relief, which it needs to do in a play. Things have to come to some sort of relief. I mean, some sort of vision. You have to see it somehow.
Right.
You don't just sort of, it's not like overhearing a conversation in a restaurant about love and then hearing it some other time or never again. Something happens on the stage. But, you know, Nilo Cruz has been drawn before to Lorca's personal struggle and tragedy, you know, his being murdered at the age of 38. So Nilo set this play in 1998, which would be the centennial of Lorca's birth. And Nilo has often been drawn, and I'm very drawn to it right now because I'm working on it, to Lorca's insistence that death is one thing, and it's inevitable. And in certain aspects, there are certain aspects of death that aren't even to be feared because they're inevitable or they're freeing. But that what isn't inevitable is wounding, or the wound in the world, because humans choose to do those things. And so Nilo has done that with this play, exploring the price, you might say, the cost of the wound, you know, the one that's held for a long time or the one that's just a lashing out that wounds. Having said that, as you had a chance to see a rehearsal, you can see, though, that he creates a very beautiful rhythm for examining that and experiencing that. It's almost musical in a certain way. You know, it sort of flows on because of Lorca. Lorca guides us through it. He speaks directly to the audience and takes us through the stories of these other four people, and that makes it flow.
Yeah, and it helps each one kind of try to make sense of what's going on. And mm-hmm. The central character, who is a father, the play is called Beauty of the Father, is a man who is reuniting with his daughter for the first time in her adult life. Mm-hmm. And that reunion alone is enough material for an entire play in itself, all the other complexities of the other characters.
Especially since he abandoned this, she was a child then, and her mother in the United States, and returned to Spain, leaving them there. So now she's come to Spain to find him.
Right.
And yes, very complicated, very, very powerful human activity, though, that idea of moving from abandonment to some sort of answer or even some sort of reconciliation if possible.
Right, and of course many abandonments like that are complicated because who really left whom?
Right.
And then this question, which I think is a really important and interesting exploration of what is selfishness, mm-hmm. if you're an artist. And I was thinking, here's Nilo Cruz writing about this and probably reflecting on it for himself as a playwright.
Absolutely.
And as a person who may be a father, may be a family man of some kind, and is also a lover and is an artist.
I can tell you that in the rehearsal process, of course, I have read the question of this artist, Emiliano, to Lorca, the ghost of Lorca. Have I been selfish as an artist? And I had read it, of course, and we'd had read-throughs, and I was hearing it. But there was a moment in a rehearsal in which the actors were off book, and I was also, therefore, not looking at the book. There was a stage manager following the script. I was just looking and listening. And it hit me very hard at that moment, that question.
Yeah.
Very hard. Have I been selfish with all this? It's a complex and an important question, I think.
Very much so, because we are taught to serve,
mm-hmm.
and it's right to serve.
Sure.
And if you are going to be an artist and devote your life passionately to something, and you spend all your life serving others, maybe in mm-hmm. what seem like trivial ways, you're not going to do your art.
Right. You couldn't. There is a kind of solitude involved, kind of necessary.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, you find people in your life, and in my case, I found a person to spend my life with who understands that.
And who is involved in the same enterprise.
Involved, too, now. I mean, you know, became involved and been my partner in that, too.
But yeah.
I did have some answer to that question that night, although it hit me very hard.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the many interesting questions in this play. Now, as you say, Lorca, who is played by Jonathan Dixon in the play, is at the center of the action. And for you as a theater person, having read and directed plays by Lorca, does this Lorca seem like the Lorca that you know?
It does, indeed. It does seem like the Lorca I imagined. I think so. I think Nilo is very, very close to Lorca's vision and Lorca's poetry, because to get myself ready to direct this, I reread every Lorca poem in both languages out loud. I studied them again, and I found images in the poems that are in the play, you know, all over the place.
Right.
It's just filled with the images of the nest, of the moon, of the horse, I mean, of the tide, all those kinds of things, white roses, and so on. So all of that, resonates. But it also resonates with Lorca's work in the theater. People don't always know that when he came back from a trip to the big tour, you might say extended visit to the United States, where he spent a lot of time in Harlem, when he came back to Spain, he created a theater company, a little company that went out into very remote little villages and performed on, they'd clear a space or sweep a sidewalk and perform for free. And he did that, and while he was out there, they were not only performing, but he was also, as he said, trying to decide how his work could become the voice of the voiceless. So that struggle really resonates with me. It always has. I mean, my work, life and work in Colombia for 8 years, as a young person, took me to that question, you know, what is my work for? So I always remember that there are those who don't have a voice or can't find a voice, and that we have these opportunities. I mean, there we are in this beautiful theater, all this equipment, all these very talented people creating things, and we have this great gift, really, in front of us. And so I still ask myself, you know, does it add up? Is it a contribution? You know,
yeah.
Is there something being addressed, or is there an experience inherent in it that someone may need to see made real on the stage? So, this play answers that, as others have for us, Emile's Enemies, on and on. We've done play, and we've done comedies, of course, too. We've even done operettas, because that's part of the human experience as well, to sing, to laugh, to dance, of course. This one takes us to this beautiful encounter we would call it a spirit. The Spanish call it a duende. So Lorca comes back not as a ghost that frightens and wearing a white sheet or something, everybody runs screaming. He comes back as a duende, and the duende, and it's very important in Spanish culture, it's the familiar spirit, the one who comes probably to help in some way, help someone who's about to pass through something and help them pass through it. Even
whether
death.
whether it be in a transition in your life,
uh-huh,
or transition
from life.
Life
to death.
Right.
But they're not frightening spirits at all. They're sort of familiar spirits. It's a lovely concept, really. And it also seems in the play, because Lorca has been dead for 100 years when the play is supposedly happening, that he is also searching himself for some connection, reconnection, or extended connection, or repeated connection to human activity. He loved human activity.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
He was a great conversationalist, a singer, he wrote music. You know, he loved the life of people.
Well, so, and you think with somebody whose life was cut short like that, who loved life so much, their ghost probably would not be all that happy,
right,
out in
would be restless.
Wherever it is.
Wherever that is.
Wherever that is. And they would want nothing more than to be themselves again.
In this case, that wherever, though, is in Granada, around Granada, which was Lorca's great love of a city. And so at least he's being restless around the city that he loves. So there are probably other plays to be written or other visits by Lorca to be, you know, written about. I'm sure there are many who have experienced him, his duende.
So we're talking about the play Beauty of the Father by Nilo Cruz, which is opening this weekend and runs for 2 weekends with theater work. And you have been doing, I've seen a number of the plays that you've done at the James A. Little Theater where the audience is not out in the audience. They're sitting on the stage and you kind of build these, not bleachers, but raked seats on each side so that the audience members are facing each other as well as the stage.
Right, we do. We've done it that way before. We've done it just with the audience on one side. But what we end up doing, because there's a very large, very well-equipped stage there, it's as big as many little theaters in town, you might say, the whole place. So what we end up doing is creating this seating area.
Yeah.
Just on one side, just off the lip, you might say, of the stage, into that. There's a big gap between the stage and the seats at the James Little. We've also performed there with the whole house, you know, with people in the seats, and used the stage as a proscenium. But I like this intimacy, I think, especially for a play like this.
Right.
In fact, we even chose to not create a painted floor, which we've often done there. We've often created a painted floor. We chose this time to leave the walnut floor bare and let it run right over under the feet of the audience as well, so that they're very, it's clearer that this, because Lorca's always speaking to someone and explaining things and hoping that they will keep coming along with him further. And though that someone, of course, is the audience. So we wanted to let them feel as almost as if they've just come, you know, he's actually brought them there. Or they've come upon him somewhere under a tree or near a white rose bush or by the sea. And he has taken them. Come with me to see this artist near here who's trying to paint my portrait. And we'll see what's happening with him. And so we go. So this intimacy, the intimacy of having the audience on two sides. In other words, one ends up not then creating sort of illusions or you can't create pictures that are seeming to be, to sort of trick an audience into seeing something. You have to bring them into the action of the play and let them find the emotional qualities and everything right there in what's being said and done.
And as always, you have a beautiful and very poetically constructed set.
Oh, yeah.
With, I imagine, images from Lorca's poetry.
Absolutely. All over the place, even on the backs of canvases that are sort of flying into the air, you might say.
Yeah.
Fragments of Lorca's poems are handwritten on them. And we had great fun with that. That was really wonderful. And our Richard Gonzalez, who's been our props master since we moved to Santa Fe, he was right there at the beginning, has created again all these and found or created all these beautiful little objects that if you no matter where you look, and we sort of like this approach, when you look at the set, almost anywhere you look, you're drawn back into the story or into the imagist content of the story. So there's not that we want people sitting there just staring at the set, but they could. They come early.
Yes, indeed.
They could just watch the set for a while. Somebody said you should sell tickets to the set.
Well, the play is called Beauty of the Father. It's by Nilo Cruz. Presented by Theater Work, of which David Olson is the artistic director. And you can go this Friday and Saturday at 7:30 and the next weekend as well. And then the following week, starting on Valentine's Day, February 14th, it's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, all at 7:30. And then Sundays are at 2 o'clock, and it closes on Sunday, February 17th. It's at the James A. Little Theater, which is on Cerrillos Road on the campus of the New Mexico School for the Deaf. For reservations, you can call 471-1799 or go to theaterwork.org. David Olson, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me today again.